Blog Talk Radio.
Diggity, 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 damn. I got a lot for you. I'm going to give you a breakdown of some poll numbers here to kick it off. Clinton versus Trump or Bernie versus Trump? What's the better way to go? Well, we have a definitive answer. People might not like that answer, but we have a definitive answer. John Stewart sat down for a podcast with David Axelrod, and he said a lot of interesting things. In fact, we may as well rename today's show the John Stewart Show, because I got like three segments on John Stewart, but I think they're all interesting and they're all worthy of covering. So we're going to get to that actually pretty quickly here. It's one of the first stories we have. And then we also have a bombshell story about the federal government suing the state of North Carolina and North Carolina suing the federal government, and we have yet another situation of what appears to be a civil rights battle, man. I mean, you know, we all know the history of the federal government versus the South, and looks like we're rehashing that now. And this time it's on the transgender rights front. So we'll talk about that. And then later on, we have – I got a whole bunch of religious stuff today. And also, I have some new devastating effects of climate change that I'm sure people didn't really think would happen in our lifetimes, but it's happening, so be afraid, be very afraid. I'm reminded of something that Bill Maher said when he was accused of using scare tactics when talking about climate change. He said, yeah, because it's scary. So if something actually is scary, then discussing the facts of that thing scare you. It's not like it's made up. Like, the right wing usually has to make stuff up in order to scare you. When we talk about climate change, it should actually scare you, especially if you're somebody who has kids, or you're somebody who, you know, has grandkids or whatever the case is. It's something that we all got to think about. We got to, you know, make a move here in order to try to fix it or mitigate the damage. And for everybody listening on the live show here, here's what I'm noticing as I look in the monitor right now. I see myself in the monitor. I look like a Power Ranger today. You probably think that makes no sense at all, but I guarantee you, if you click on the YouTube videos later, tweet at me. Tell me if I'm correct. I think I'm correct. I look like a Power Ranger. How is it possible to look like a Power Ranger in like work clothes, business clothes? You'll see. That's all I'll say. All right, so let's kick it off here, and we're going to do that with some polling data. Yippee skippy. So I decided to take a look at the rear – I can't say the word real. It was rear. All right, try that again. So I decided to take a look here at the Real Clear Politics average on polling for the general election. And I have the Trump versus Clinton numbers, and I have the Bernie versus Trump numbers. Now, an important question moving forward is, what would be a safer general election for the Democrats? Well, it turns out that answer is exactly the same as it was on day one when they first started doing these polls, and that's that Bernie Sanders is a much better general election candidate. Now, it's fair for people to say, well, we don't know because a thousand things could happen in a general election and perhaps that would change at some point and the numbers would move at some point. That's a fair counterpoint, but it is not fair and it is certainly not legitimate to say that this means nothing. You can say, hey, I don't weigh it as the end-all be-all. That's fair. But to say that it means absolutely nothing and that it's not true that right now Bernie is a better candidate than Hillary Clinton, that's just factually incorrect in a general election. So let's take a look at the last three polls for each scenario here. So first we have on the Trump versus Clinton front, we have public policy polling. They have Clinton up by 6 percentage points. So you say, okay, that's a fairly wide margin that, you know, not sure you can sleep on that, but it's close enough where, okay. Then we have CNN ORC has Hillary up 13 points, so goddamn. There's one where you go, okay, wow. So we, but perhaps we don't have to worry about Trump in a Trump versus Hillary race. But then we have Rasmussen, who has Trump up 2 percentage points. Damn. Now, Rasmussen is kind of known to be a little bit right-leaning, so you can say, I'm not sure I trust those that much. But when you look at the overall average for all the different polls that have been done on this, you have Hillary up 6.4 percentage points. Again, that's decent, but it's not, you know, you can't rest assured on that, and you can't sleep on that, because anything can happen if it's just a 6 percentage point lead over time. You don't know, and a lot of this depends, again, on how they're going to run their campaigns. But now let's go ahead and take a look at Bernie versus Trump. So we have public policy polling has Bernie up over Trump in a head-to-head general election race 11 percentage points. Okay, pretty solid. But the others, I'm sure, are not that much, right? Well, let's take a look at CNN ORC. They have Bernie up 16 percentage points. That's the biggest lead of anybody yet. Okay, but you say, well, there was one poll there that had Hillary down to Trump, so obviously there's going to be one that has Bernie down to Trump. In our third poll here, the IBD-TIPP poll, you have Bernie up 12 percentage points. In fact, when you look at the Real Clear Politics average of all the polls done on Bernie versus Trump in a head-to-head race, Bernie is up. He more than doubles the lead that Hillary has over Trump. As of right now, this is not an open question. We know who the better general election candidate is. And furthermore, there are other polls that were just released right before I came on air here. I think NBC News was one of them, and there was another one that was another. And it showed that when you look at the swing states, so you look at Ohio, you look at Florida, and there was one other in there. I'm blanking on which one. Bernie Sanders is up over Trump in those swing states more than Hillary Clinton is up over Trump in those swing states. And on top of that, Hillary Clinton has super high unfavorables in Florida specifically, they mentioned. Now, Trump does too, but Hillary, I think it's she's negative 20 in favorability. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. So this idea, this narrative that, well, obviously Hillary Clinton would be a general election candidate, that's birthed out of nothing but establishment wisdom 101. And that so-called establishment wisdom has been wrong every step of the way so far. That's the same establishment wisdom that said there's no way Trump is going to even make it to Iowa for the first caucus. He's going to drop out before that. Well, we know how that went. Then they said, it's okay, he's going to drop out after New Hampshire. Then he won New Hampshire in a landslide. They said, no, then it's okay, he's going to drop out after Nevada. Then he won Nevada in a landslide. And they just kept moving the goalposts, move him. And then at the end of it, everybody's like, I love how, like, after Trump gets the nomination, then everybody starts to pretend like they kind of knew it all along. Like, well, no, he was leading a lot the entire way, so obviously, I mean, did I see it coming? Of course I saw it coming. No, you didn't. And in fact, you know, people were making fun of me at one point because after only 3 states had voted, I said it's almost a guarantee that Trump is going to be the nominee. You would need a minor miracle for Trump not to be the nominee. I said that after only 3 states voted. I said it's an 80% chance Trump's the nominee. I was one of maybe 4 other pundits in total in all of American politics that said that. And some people, to their credit, had it before me. But the establishment pundits were like, yeah, okay, Trump is still not going to be the nominee. But then after the fact, they go, oh, shit, we saw that coming. You don't think that's a possibility in a Trump versus Hillary general election? Oh, of course it is. They say, like, people harp away on the fact that Trump has high unfavorables. You know who also has high unfavorables? Hillary fucking Clinton. She's the second most disliked general election candidate in American history. I'm not kidding about that. Number one is Trump. But in the case of Hillary, remember, she's already showing signs of going to the right, which would be a horrible general election strategy. She thinks that's how she'll get independence. In fact, that's how she'll lose more independence. And Trump is moving to the left. So you got the Republican, and remember, the Republican base voters will fall in line no matter what behind their person. So Trump can move to the left. They're still going to vote for him. And in fact, they like it when he talks about, hey, I'm not going to cut Social Security. Now he's flip-flop on the minimum wage. There's a million and one things where they look at that and they're also in favor of those things. It just has to come from a Republican. It can't come from a Democrat. So the base will vote for Trump no matter what. Trump gets independents at a higher rate than Hillary does. And, you know, Hillary is not only going to lose independents, but she's also alienating her own base by running to the right, because the Democratic base historically does not fall in line as much as the Republican base does. And I think rightfully so. So here we are. We have the numbers, we have the data, but still you have people smugly saying Hillary's a better general election candidate based on absolutely nothing. They're basing it on nothing. And then to put the cherry on top, as we all know, Hillary is under FBI investigation. You know, some people made a good point recently. They said, flip the scenario. Imagine Bernie was under an FBI investigation. How much would the Hillary supporters just scream at him to drop out because you're putting the safety of the country at risk, because you're making it so that perhaps the general election will be handed to Trump if there's an indictment or something in the general election, or there's some bombshell that happens when the rest of those emails leak. I mean, if the roles were reversed, there's no question that the Hillary supporters would be like, oh, you got to drop out. Oh, my God, you're under FBI investigation. What are you, crazy? You want Donald Trump to be president? I guess you want Donald Trump to be president. But when it's Hillary, somehow they still smugly and condescendingly lecture Bernie supporters and Bernie voters as if he's the problem. And remember, so people would say, yeah, but you know what? She's leading by 2 million votes, so get over it. But, you know, what are you doing here? She's up by a lot, so www.suckitup.org. But no, what that analysis leaves out is, yet again, independent voters. See, independent voters vote in a general election. In the Democratic primary so far, they've been suppressed by the DNC and by Hillary Clinton, by Debbie Wasserman Schultz. So the rules in various primaries just don't allow independents to vote. In New York, I know, this is my state. They didn't allow independents to vote at all. They didn't even have same-day registration. You have to flip parties like a month before or something crazy. So you could suppress the independents in the primary, but then when you get to a general, they're all going to vote. And you can't rig that. And we know that the independents overwhelmingly go to Bernie over Hillary, and they even go to Bernie over Trump. And Trump does get a decent amount of independents right now, but the polls show Bernie would get more. So those independents are going to vote in a general election. So you might have a lead in a rigged primary process, but would it be as big of a lead if it wasn't rigged? Fuck no. It just wouldn't. It wouldn't be as big of a lead. Maybe you'd still have a little lead, as some of the national polls indicate, but it wouldn't be the lead you have now. So there's a variety of reasons why Bernie's better in the general election. People don't trust Hillary Clinton. Her unfavorable numbers are through the roof. She runs to the right and abandons her base for all the reasons I stated and then some. And just these numbers, we know that as of right now, Bernie would be a much better general election candidate. Okay, now, here we go with the John Stewart Fest. I hope you guys are ready. Sat down for a podcast with David Axelrod, and he discussed the state of the 2016 election. Let's watch.
How responsible is the media for Donald Trump?
Oh, I don't – listen, I don't necessarily believe that a full-court press on his untruthfulness would necessarily change it. I mean, he's not – he was voted for, but I do think he is generally the conclusion to years of – he makes sense if you view it through the prism of talk radio. I like to drive, and so I listen to talk radio, and it is 24/7 of your country is being taken away from you. As far as I can tell, the conservative side or on the right side, they feel an ownership over America. They are the stewards of America. They are its forebearers. Exactly. Republicans, conservatives, love America. They just hate like 50% of the people living in it.
Okay, so there are a few things there that I think are interesting. First of all, he says he doesn't necessarily blame the media for the rise of Trump. I do. I blame the media because they never really fact-checked or focused on the right things. Whenever they got mad about Trump or they covered him ad nauseum, it was PC outrage. Like, I remember when he was, you know, giving this off-the-cuff speech at a rally, and somebody in the audience screamed out that Ted Cruz was a pussy or something, and he kind of, like, repeated it on stage without saying pussy, but he's like, oh, you heard what she said? And so they took that little moment, and they spoke about it for, like, 3 days, where, oh, Trump called somebody a pussy. Unbelievable. I remember the ad that was run by, I think, some right-wing think tank that showed all the times that Trump cursed. That's another thing that the media covered ad nauseum. He has breached decorum. I cannot believe this. I am so shocked. It's like the media, they were collectively acting like four-year-olds and just getting outraged at all the wrong things. Meanwhile, Trump had said, for example, we need to kill the families of ISIS. Not just ISIS, the families of ISIS. So murder civilians in the Middle East on purpose. Okay, that's what I like to call terrorism. So Donald Trump advocated for war crimes and terrorism on live TV. Did that generate a day of coverage, 3 days of coverage, a week of coverage? No, it didn't. It barely got a fucking mention. Donald Trump said the Geneva Conventions is the problem. Did that generate a day, 3 days, a week of coverage? No, it didn't. You had more coverage for when he almost said pussy. So I blame the media because of their sensationalism bias and their lack of priorities and their the shitty people that have been hired in this establishment corporatist structure where they don't know how to focus on the right things. You know, if you had somebody who's actually a news junkie and who cares about the policy and they hear Trump say the things he says, they would get outraged and they would cover him a lot, but they'd focus on the shit that he says that says, oh, okay, now my job as a news anchor here, as a journalist or as a reporter is to tell you this guy, he's no longer a viable candidate. He's not a viable candidate because, goddamn, he just called the Geneva Conventions the problem. He said we should torture, quote, even if it doesn't work. He wants to copy ISIS tactics. Okay, now he's not an option. You're not going to vote for him. End of conversation. And would that work? Of course that would work. It worked with fucking Howard Dean. Howard Dean made a noise in a primary. Meow! A lot of you guys probably remember the awesome Chappelle Show skit. He's like, meow! Okay, Howard Dean made that noise. It was a week of wall-to-wall coverage about, he made a noise! He's unqualified to be president! He's unqualified to be president! And people went, I guess you're right. I guess he's unqualified to be president. And then nobody voted for him after that. He got his ass handed to him after that when he was leading at the time. Or he was recently leading up to that. So with Trump, if he says these things that are egregious and ridiculous and wrong, and you say, that's it, he's no longer an option, well then, yeah, that would steer the media narrative quite a bit. And that would steer the country, rightfully speaking, and it would make it so that they go, okay, he's not an option. He is a reality show clown and a buffoon, and he's crazy. But the media didn't do that. Every time they got mad, it actually strengthened him because they got mad at the wrong things. They got mad, like I said, at the PC outrage nonsense. Okay, anything identity politics related, that's what they focused. It was never, hey, here's the substance. For example, another thing, his tax plan added trillions of dollars to the debt. Did anybody say, even the conservatives who say, oh, that's all they care about is debt, did any of them come out and say, oh, this, look at this tax plan, what a mess this is, this is crazy. You say you want to balance the budget, you added trillions to the debt, that makes no sense. Nobody challenged them. And whatever they did, it was a little bit, it was never the day, 3 day, week long coverage that really hammers home a point when you need to. So I do blame the media more than Jon Stewart does. And then the other thing is, so I don't think that Trump is the logical conclusion of talk radio. As I've said before, I actually think that Ted Cruz is the logical conclusion of talk radio because Ted Cruz actually listens to those shows and he's actually a Kool-Aid drinker. Like, Ted Cruz actually loves Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck was campaigning for him. And on virtually every issue, this is the guy who, like, that's where he gets his policy positions from those people. So he's the true talk radio Kool-Aid drinker. Now, Donald Trump, he's the logical conclusion of the failure of the establishment. So, in other words, the establishment, actually all of the establishment, but even more specifically, you could say the Republican establishment, they've been so immensely disconnected from their constituents that you open up the door for a con man to come in and just take the whole thing. For example, on free trade, the Republican Party all along, and even the Democratic Party, just the establishment, they've been in favor of so-called free trade, which is just outsourcing jobs, for such a long time that all you needed was somebody to come along and be a little bit populist, and then everybody, you know, pulls down their panties for them. That's Donald Trump. Yeah, no, I'm against these stupid free trade deals. I'd Carrier, the air conditioning company, they went to Mexico. All I'm going to do is I'm going to slap a tariff on them, so when they send their products back in the country, 35% tax. What are you going to do now? You're going to bring that plant back here, aren't you? That's what you're going to do. That's what I want you to do. We're going to have jobs built in America. He says we're going to have Apple products built in America. Everything's going to be built in America. This is what we're going to do. So, yeah, the people who've been just totally left behind and forgotten by the party establishment, they're like, fuck yeah, that's what I wanted to hear. Social Security, as Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio were up there like idiots in the debate, we have to be fiscally responsible and we have to cut it because we got to do the right thing and we got to make sure that we have enough money, blah, 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 blah. Trump's like, I'm not going to cut it. You paid into it. If I cut it, I'm robbing you. That's true. He's right. So here you have a guy who actually more is representing the sentiment of the people in both parties in that respect. So they voted for him. So the Republican establishment and the establishment, they failed so badly on so many economic fronts because they don't care about the people that all you needed was somebody to come along and say, I care, even if he doesn't in real life, which I don't think he does, and they voted for him. And then the one area where I'd say he's right, though, is what he's referring to is like something that I've said before, which is that Trump in some ways is the quintessential Republican. In some ways, like I just described, he's better with his rhetoric than they are, but in some ways he really is the quintessential Republican. So when all the other Republicans speak in coded language to be racist and xenophobic and bigoted, Trump just says, I'm going to drop the coded language because I don't even think a lot of you guys understand it because you're not that bright, and I'm just going to say it. Yeah, I want to ban all Muslims from entering the country. That's what I want to do. Yeah, I want to build a wall, and guess what? Mexico's going to pay for it. And I'm going to have deportation forces, and I'm going to kick out over 10 million people. That's what I'm going to do. So all the other things that the Republican candidates flirted with over the years, Trump's like, why are you just flirting with it? Let's go all the way here. I want to do these things. And he just says, almost unabashedly, yeah, I'm kind of xenophobic, I'm kind of bigoted. And the Republican-based voters, they've always had that nerve there where they scapegoat the other for their problems, namely people who are worse off than them, and they go, yes, that's who I want to vote for. So I think that's kind of what Stewart means when he says that Trump is the talk radio candidate, the logical outgrowth or the logical conclusion of talk radio. And in that respect, it's true, in the respect of xenophobia and bigotry, so on and so forth. But I would actually say that Ted Cruz more embodies the different positions of the talk radio hosts, and I would say that Trump really is also in some ways, specifically when it comes to economics, he is the logical outgrowth of a GOP establishment and just an establishment that is so disconnected from their people that they don't know how to say that they're in favor of what the people are in favor of anymore. All right, I don't have enough time for the next story here, but it's another Jon Stewart story, and then I have another one because I have some awesome clips of him saying stuff here. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to jump on that. And then also a bombshell story coming out of Washington about North Carolina. We have ourselves an old school civil rights head-to-head here. So you don't want to miss that story or any of the other stuff we got planned here. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
of a bitch. All right, we're back. We're back, guys. By the way, I love how, I mean, I guess it's because some people are new to the show and stuff, but it's almost like every day when I tweet out the two songs, yada yada, so, there's always somebody who's like, oh, what do you mean? Or somebody's like, is this some kind of joke? I don't understand. And I'm like, really? I mean, we've been doing it for so long. You don't. So I've been trying anyway. I've been trying more now to say exactly what it's for in every tweet, so I don't get those annoying tweets later on. People are like, why do you tweet this? Can you just assume there's obviously some sort of logical reason? Like, no, why are you doing this, man? It's for the break music, all right? And also, for those who don't know how I pick it out, it's literally just the first two that come to me. Unless there's some sort of issue, like it's less than 3 minutes, which that's the only rule. It's got to be longer than 3 minutes. Or if it's something that we've played, like, in the past week or so, then I'll ignore it. But there you go. Anyway, tell everybody you know. I know this is an important public service announcement. God damn it, the two songs are for the break music, all right? I got more Jon Stewart for you, so you should be happy. He's been away, man. We miss his voice. We miss his voice. Nothing against Trevor Noah or anything, but I don't think those aren't shoes that are fillable. You know what I mean? And actually, for those of you who don't know, Jon Stewart was not the original person that hosted The Daily Show. There was one person before him. I think it was Craig Kilborn. Did I get that name right? I think I did, but apparently his shoes were fillable. But I don't think Jon Stewart's shoes are fillable. Call me crazy. That's just me. They could have just done a different format of the show or just a different show that's somewhat similar. You know what I mean? You should have went in that direction. But anyway, here we go again. Jon Stewart, this time on Hillary Clinton. Let me set this up for you. Jon Stewart had some thoughts here on Hillary Clinton, and perhaps unsurprisingly, it's not all puppies and rainbows.
It's not okay to have nostalgia for the Mad Men society.
Oops.
And think that is...
That's the wrong one. Hold up. Yeah, my bad. Put it in the wrong order. Here we go.
What I think about Hillary Clinton is, I imagine to be a very bright woman without the courage of her convictions, because I'm not even sure what they are. So I would suggest that when I watch her campaign, it reminds me of, and again, I'm throwing out references that mean absolutely nothing to anybody, so I will continue to do that. She reminds me of Magic Johnson's talk show. And I won't say anything.
You have that thought too, huh?
If you ever watched Magic Johnson talk, Magic Johnson was a charming individual, but he wasn't a talk show host. And when you watched his show, you could almost see Arsenio's advice to him in real-time rendering. So he would sit and he would go, my first guest tonight, Arsenio said, enthusiasm is something that Sal is, my first guest tonight is, share everybody! But it never seemed authentic and real to his personality. It seemed like he was wearing an outfit designed by someone else, for someone else, to be someone else. And that is not to say that she is not preferable to Donald Trump, because at this point, I would vote for Mr. T over Donald Trump. But she will. I think she will be in big trouble if she can't find a way. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe a real person doesn't exist underneath there.
Good googly moogly. Those are some tough words. And I think he's right. You know, when I look at Hillary Clinton, what I see is a shapeshifter. Whatever room she's in front of, she's going to tailor her message to that room. So flip-flopping in her mind is not an issue. I see a narcissist. I see that she's power-hungry. In fact, that's the overwhelming sense I get as to why she's running for president. She wants the glory associated with it without necessarily doing the hard work in terms of policy substance and really being in it for the right reasons. And I think most importantly here, and he didn't really touch on this, but I think given enough time, he probably would have, because he seems like he gets it. She is the establishment. There is no politician who is more quintessential establishment than Hillary Clinton. She's a Washington insider through and through. I mean, we've spoken about this before, but the way that she's gotten endorsements has been super suspect, because what she'll do is it's carrots and sticks. She'll cut deals behind closed doors, and she'll let people know, hey, look, you know, if you do the right thing, you go on my good list. You do the wrong thing, you go on my bad list, and you don't want to be on that bad list. Whereas Bernie Sanders, for example, you have the sense that when he gets endorsements, it's because people just listen to his message and they go, I'm going to endorse that guy because he's right. Whereas Hillary does make those backroom deals and does make it so that, hey, if slash when I'm in power, I return the favor, so you got to remember that. So this is why you have, for example, former civil rights legends who have endorsed Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders. It's not because her record is better, because there's literally not a single argument that can be made that her record is better. Bernie's is significantly better. When Hillary Clinton was a Goldwater girl back in the day, supporting a candidate who was for segregation, you had Bernie Sanders, who was literally doing civil rights protests, and he got arrested for it, and he marched with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. There's no question here. For people to try to pretend like it's an open thing, like, that's just massively disingenuous, or it's ignorant. We know that Bernie's record is significantly better. It's not an issue. It's not even close. So former civil rights legends endorsing Hillary is because they're both political insiders at this point, and it's, hey, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. This is how it works. And that's why Hillary has such high unfavorables, and people just don't fucking trust her. They look at her and they go, I don't like you, I don't trust you, something's wrong, because something is wrong. And again, the facts bear this out. So this isn't born out of personal animus and dislike of Hillary, because, look, man, she's the Democratic candidate. You don't think I want to be in love with the Democratic candidate and pushing for the Democratic candidate big time over the Republican candidate? Of course I want to be. But it just so happens that she's taken so much money from Wall Street, and her votes have been influenced. Elizabeth Warren tells that story about how at one point Hillary Clinton was against a bankruptcy bill that massively biased the rules in favor of corporations. Then after she became senator and took so much money from Wall Street and the financial institutions, she flipped her vote, and then she supported the bankruptcy bill that was rigged in their favor. And the list goes on and on. We've given so many examples. Her single-payer pivot, flip-flop, was influenced by money from the health insurance companies and the health industry. So she used to be in favor of single-payer. After she started taking gargantuan amounts of money from the health industry, all of a sudden, over time, she flipped. That's not a fucking coincidence, man. It's not like she sat down and said, okay, let me look at these policies and try to determine which one is going to be best for the constituents in Spokane. No, she got the money, and she knows this is the way the system works. So now I will do what they want as well. I will flip, and I will do what the donors want. And by the way, don't get me wrong, I think she rationalizes it. So in other words, she'll take the money from the health insurance industry, and then what she'll do is she'll do like the old Obama move. Oh, we have a big tent. We need to represent everybody. Therefore, not only will I represent my constituents and the people, I will also represent the industry. But no, you shouldn't. One of them you're supposed to crack down on and regulate and make sure they don't fuck over your constituents. The other one are just your constituents. You're supposed to represent them. But under the guise of a big tent, you go, oh, I'll appease the industry and I'll help out my constituents. And that's how they rationalize it. Obamacare is a perfect example of that. Hey, let's do a proposal that the health insurance companies by and large like, and also the people will get more covered more. Now, it's not still universal health care, so we should all be upset that it didn't go all the way. But they say, hey, I did enough, didn't I? See, a progressive who likes to get things done, namely by selling out to a certain extent to corporations, to Wall Street, to the industry. Remember, between Hillary and Bill, they've raised over $3 billion in speaking fees alone in their careers. No, I'm sorry. It's $3 billion in their entire career, over $100 million in speaking fees alone. The over $100 million, that went right into their pockets. They're raising over $3 billion. That's for everything. That's for the Clinton Foundation, which is super questionable. And remember, Hillary did deals when she was Secretary of State for people who donate to the Clinton Foundation, namely Saudi Arabia and other countries who got weapons deals. But that includes donations to the Clinton Foundation. That includes their campaigns, their super PACs, to them personally. So when you tally up everything, it's over $3 billion. You don't think she's going to return favors to all the people who gave her money? She's the quintessential insider. Of course she is. And this, I come full circle all the way back to John Stewart's point. Dude, that's why she's out there and she seems like a shell of a human being, because she is. Because she has so many allegiances and alliances to big moneyed interests that what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Okay, now you have to go out there and parrot and pretend like you've been fighting for just the people all along. Well, that's not the case. Bernie has been. So he gets out there, he seems authentic because he is authentic, and he's like, I want single-payer universal health care. We need universal college. This is what we need in America. You go, that guy's telling the truth. That guy believes it. Whereas Hillary's like, half the time, we need to somehow cover everybody. And then, no, we can't do single payer, though. And half the time she says she's more progressive than Bernie, which makes no sense. The other half the time she says she's more moderate. She contradicts herself ad nauseum. And she makes a joke of herself. Like, for example, remember when Bernie said, you represented Wall Street. And what was her response? 9/11. Yeah, I represented them because I was in New York during 9/11. Everybody was like, whoa, what the fuck did you just say? You crazy person. I mean, how disconnected do you have to be from reality to make that argument as if you're nailing it? But that's Hillary Clinton. Let me say what I have to say to get elected, put on this veneer of being progressive right now, and then the second she has the opportunity, because she feels like she's already in the general, what does she do? She doesn't court Bernie voters, who aren't too hot on her. She doesn't care about them because she thinks they're going to fall in line anyway. What does she do? She courts Bush donors. We covered the story the other day. And she says, I represent your values better than Donald Trump. So don't take it from me, take it from her. Before she was a progressive, likes to get things done. And before she said, I go tougher on Wall Street than Bernie. Now all of a sudden that we're in the general, she calls Bush donors on Wall Street and says, I represent your values. So everything John Stewart said was right here. She seems disingenuous, and she seems like there's not a real person under the facade, because she is disingenuous, and there isn't a real person under the facade. All right, and finally, one more here on John Stewart. John Stewart made some fascinating comments about political correctness in a podcast here with David Axelrod. Let's listen.
It's not okay to have nostalgia for the Mad Men society and think that that ignorance is virtue. And they have twisted this around so that his ignorant pronouncements are somehow a sign of great character. It's like where I grew up, when people go like, hey, look, no disrespect. I'm not saying your mother's a whore. I'm saying, and you're like, I think that's what you're saying.
The difference is he would just say your mother's a whore.
Right. But when he says, people are so nervous. See, here's what's so amazing about this. So the whole idea of political correctness is everybody's so sensitive. Just get over it. Why should African Americans be so sensitive about police shootings? Why do they have to be so sensitive about years of systemic racism creating economic disparity? Come on. I'm not a slave owner. Donald Trump couldn't handle us making a joke about him. Vanity Fair, Graydon Carter did a joke about Donald Trump's hands 25 years ago. He's still not fucking over it.
That's literal.
His aren't any bigger.
So Muslims... Not true, by the way. He actually did
finger
a deal.
Extensions.
Trump International. And if you see them now, they say Trump and go left. But the idea being that Muslims, hey, man, all he's saying is they're evil and shouldn't be allowed in this country. He's just telling it like it is. But God forbid you say happy holidays in December. It's fucking war. So who is it who's exactly sensitive here?
Jeez, we need this guy back on TV. We need this guy back on TV. No disrespect to Trevor Noah. No disrespect to Larry Wilmore. No disrespect to Colbert. But there's only one Jon Stewart. There's no filling the Jon Stewart shoes. So that's 100% accurate. So oftentimes I think it's true that the left is too politically correct. So let me give you some examples of that. On college campuses, we have these things called trigger warnings, where it's like, oh, you know, you got to let people know before you're going to say something. It's going to be slightly offensive, or else, you know, you're a bad person if you don't warn them in advance. Okay, that's kind of babyish, and I do think that's too politically correct. We have stuff called safe spaces, where, oh, it's a place where don't worry, you're not going to be challenged, and you're not going to feel like an outsider. Well, then the whole point of college just went away. You're supposed to be challenged. It's supposed to, you're supposed to battle ideas there. And I think that that's stupid, too. And it is, this is coming from the left. And then you also have microaggressions, the idea that, you know, little comments basically make people super uncomfortable and people draw conclusions about you and call you a bigot or a bad person because you said something that could kind of maybe be interpreted in a way where you're saying something offensive. Like, for example, the one that always gets me is if you say, America is a melting pot, you're like a bad person or you're a bigot. Why? Well, because then you're kind of secretly saying that people don't have a right to their own culture and they have to be more like you, and that's presupposing that you're right and they're wrong, and that's so bigoted. Like, okay, look, man, you know, these things are debatable. To try to pretend like they're not debatable is just stupid. A meritocracy is another one. If you say America's a meritocracy and on some college campuses, they say, well, there you go. That's, you know, that's a microaggression. You can't say that. Now, again, I actually don't think America is a meritocracy, and I have long arguments as to why that is. But to say that if somebody else thinks it is, that we can't have that discussion or that debate, I mean, just stop it. Stop it. So that is political correctness, and that is coming from the left. Nobody calls out the political correctness on the right, and there are countless examples of it. So he gave a perfect example right there, the war on Christmas bullshit. Every single year, Fox News does a campaign built on political correctness. That's PC outrage. Oh my God, you said happy holidays. I'm so offended. Why don't you say Merry Christmas? Then another example of right-wing PC outrage. Larry Wilmore at the White House Correspondents' Dinner made a joke using the N-word with Obama, where at the end of it, jokingly and lovingly, he said, you did it, my nigga. And then all the right wing in the blogosphere, they lost their shit. Oh my God, I'm so outraged and offended that you used that word. How dare you? So, well, I thought you guys were against political correctness. No, but that is political correctness. You're the ones who are policing jokes now. You're the ones who are policing words. You're guilty of what you accuse others of being guilty of. How do you not see that? And nobody talks about it. We're the only ones that have spoken about it, and apparently now Jon Stewart's onto it. And then also, just to give more examples here, the right waged a campaign to get people to stop saying climate science denier. Why? Because they go, well, you know, denier is offensive, and it gets me upset, because when you say denier, it sounds too much like Holocaust denier, and that's not a very respectful way to refer to me when talking about climate change. Why are you being a little PC bitch, a whiny bitch? Why don't you own up to it? Yeah, yeah, I deny climate change. I am a climate change denier. Now they go, you used the wrong word. Let me police your words. That's PC outrage. Stop pretending it isn't. It is. All right, more. Trump, the guy who's hailed as Jon Stewart points out, this like king fighting against political correctness. Dude, he literally skipped a debate because Megyn Kelly hurt his feelings. That's as big as it gets doing PC outrage. How whiny and how insecure are you? She said the wrong things to me, so now I'm going to skip the debates because I'm so offended and outraged and my feelings are hurt. You are a little PC bitch. Ironically, as people think you're the king fighting against political correctness. That is political correctness. Jon Stewart's right. That's a literal true story. There's a guy who made a joke about Trump's small hands years ago, and the entire time he's never fucking gotten over it. He's never gotten over it. In the debate, it's hilarious, too, watching him like a child. I've never heard my hands are small before. That's crazy, because somebody else pointed out in the debate his small hands. He's like, I've never heard that before. That's crazy. No, you did hear it, and you're super insecure about it, and you've been upset ever since. You haven't gotten over it. So perhaps you're the one that needs to get over shit. And just to give one more example, I could go on and on, but there's another thing now coming from the right. We just covered the story the other day. They say any criticism of Israel is anti-Semitic. Well, that is PC outrage also. You're changing the debate. That's not true at all. You know, and on the left, you could say, hey, they do something similar sometimes where they say, okay, criticism of Islam is bigotry against all Muslims. That's not true either. So that's left-wing PC outrage. Right-wing PC outrage, as we've seen, Ayla Shaked, a right-wing politician in Israel, if you criticize Israel at all, you're anti-Semitic. That's PC outrage too, because that's not true, and you change the debate. So we're at this point now where there is left-wing PC outrage, but there's also right-wing PC outrage, and very few people talk about the right-wing PC outrage. And then the cherry on top, which is the final trick that many people on the right do, is they now say that whenever you fact-check them, they'll say, why are you being so politically correct? So they want to make false, inaccurate statements and then hide behind the guise of, I'm just being politically incorrect. I'm keeping it real, but I'm being politically incorrect. And if you disagree, you're being politically correct. When in reality, the response is, no. We are being correct. You are being incorrect. So, for example, Trump with his wall. When people call out his wall proposal and they say, look, putting aside whether it's good or bad, it's not going to happen. You're not going to make Mexico pay for it. The former president, the current president, officials throughout Mexico have said, we're not going to pay for it. So it's not going to happen. Get over it. And Trump's, anytime anybody tells that to me, come on, you're being politically correct. Look at this, political correctness. Ann Coulter pulls this trick all the time. Whenever you correct her on some fallacious shit that she says that's not true, you're being politically correct. We're not being politically correct at all. We're just being correct. We're just telling you they're not going to pay for the fucking wall. You can want as much as you want. It's not going to happen unless you invade them. Do you want to invade them? And then they tap dance around that question. Why are you being so politically correct? No, we're being correct, not politically correct. So now, anytime you fact check anything the right says, they accuse you of being politically correct. No, I'm just being correct. I'm just being accurate. When I say single-payer health care is factually the best health care system in the world, a fact borne out by many studies, they go, why are you being politically correct? Anything you fact check them on now. Hey, the economy is better under Obama than it was under Bush. We still have problems, but you have unemployment that's been cut in half. The market's doubled in size. The list goes on and on. Why are you being politically correct? Why are you being politically correct? Well, you said that the economy is better under Bush, and I'm saying it's not. Well, then you're being politically correct. No, I'm being correct. I'm fact-checking your punk ass. But that's where we're at today. And Donald Trump is the best example of that. He can say anything. They literally say about our military, we're fighting too many politically correct wars. And then they go on to say, as Trump has, we need to torture, quote, even if it doesn't work. We need to bring back things worse than waterboarding. The Geneva Conventions is the problem. We need to attack the families of ISIS in the Middle East. So not ISIS, the families, civilians. So they say all those things, and when you say that's a bad idea, they're politically correct. No, I don't want the United States to officially be a terrorist nation that openly commits war crimes, says we commit war crimes, and say that that's the point. We want to kill civilians. We want to torture. We want to ignore the Geneva Conventions. And this is now official policy and doctrine. For me to say that, I'm just being correct. Not politically correct, I'm being correct. I'm making us abide by the same standards every other nation needs to abide by. And if you disagree with that, you are stupid. You are an idiot. You are a moron. That ain't political correctness. In fact, if you disagree with what I'm saying, you're the one being politically correct. Okay. Jesus, man, I went in. All right, let me do one more real quick before we take a break. So we have a bombshell story here coming out of Washington. Attorney General Loretta Lynch accused the state of North Carolina of, quote, state-sponsored discrimination against transgenders. And this, of course, is as a result of their new bathroom law. So raw story explains here. She also warned that the federal government could curtail federal funding for North Carolina if the state continued to enforce the law. She noted that the Justice Department had sent a letter to North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory warning that the law violated Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, but, quote, instead of replying, North Carolina and its governor chose to respond by suing. Thus, we are filing a civil rights lawsuit against North Carolina. Okay, so that's huge news. Understand what happened there. You have the federal government sending a letter to North Carolina. Hey, look, we're just saying if you continue enforcing this discriminatory law, we are going to withhold funding that you get from the federal government, and you're not going to like that. So instead of responding to that, they just sue them. Okay, we're going to sue you now. So then the federal government goes, okay, we're going to sue you too. So suit, countersuit, like that. And what's at stake here? Listen to this. Quote, more than $800 million in federally backed loans for public universities are at risk if North Carolina refuses to comply with the federal government, according to the Associated Press. The University of North Carolina system could lose more than $1.4 billion in federal funding. All right, so what we're seeing here is basically the next step in the civil rights battle, because this is what it's been all along. Obviously, first the South had slavery, and the North said, fuck that. We had a war over it, and we know how that ended up. Then you had Jim Crow and segregation in the South, and then again the North had to step in and say, no, we're done here. Now you gotta integrate, no more segregation. And there was obviously this massive fight, and there were lawsuits over it, and it went on and on. And then again, we know who ended up winning that one. And now we have a situation where you have people, or I should say the government and the right in North Carolina saying, hey, if you're transgender, you can't go into the bathroom of your choice. And the federal government says, actually, no, they can go in the bathroom of their choice, and we're going to enforce that because under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, you can't discriminate based on sex. So you're discriminating here based on sex. So if you keep enforcing this law, we're going to withhold funds. And then, boom, you have the two lawsuits now where they decided to go after each other. North Carolina is ridiculous. You really? You're going to go to fucking court over this? Transgender people, all this is transgender people saying, hey, can I go into the bathroom that aligns with my current gender? No! Whatever you were biologically born as, that's where you got to go. Okay, but wait, understand. This is what transgender people argue. Okay, but that's not my current gender. And hello, let's understand this. There's no evidence whatsoever of molesting or harassing or crimes being committed by transgender people going into the bathroom that matches up with their current gender. That just doesn't happen. And why is it that people just ignore that transgender people exist? I don't understand this. This idea that, like, all there is what your biological gender is, and that's the end of the conversation. No, it's not. There are people who are born male and their brain is male. There are people who are born female and their brain is female. And then also there are small percentages of people who are born male but their brain is female. People who are born female but their brain is male. And then they live in accordance with that reality. In the same way that gay people exist and they live in accordance with that reality. How, you know, most people are born what their gender is and they're attracted to the opposite sex. And some are born and they're attracted to the same sex. Who gives a fuck? Who cares? You have to treat them equally and with respect and dignity. And they're making the same arguments that they made back when black people were treated like this, where they say, well, why can't we just discriminate against them? You're taking them away now, too? We can't discriminate against them? These are the arguments that were made all along. And they hide behind the guise of states' rights. States' rights! States' rights! We have a right to take away the rights of others, therefore piss off federal government. That's exactly what they said during segregation, too. Well, why is the big bad federal government getting involved here? States' rights, states' rights. We have a right to keep blacks as second-class citizens and to segregate. Fuck off. Well, no, you don't. You don't have that right. You don't have a right to take away others' rights. So I hope the federal government wins here. They have a decent case, but it's all going to depend on the interpretation of the word sex in Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. In other words, people could look at that and say, the original intent was not to include transgender people, so North Carolina wins. Or people could look at that and say, a reasonable current-day interpretation of the term sex does include transgenders and does protect their rights to go into the bathroom of their choice. So it's all going to depend, honestly, on the political leanings of whatever courts it ends up in. So when there's a more conservative-leaning justice, they'll side with North Carolina. When there's a more liberal-leaning justice, they'll side with the federal government here. But in terms of where people should fall on this, oh, it's a no-brainer. In fact, the real crime and the real awkward situation would be if you take somebody who's, for example, a transgender woman and you make them go into the man's bathroom. Well, that's worse because then you have a woman going into the men's bathroom. Why would you want that? Why wouldn't you want the trans woman to go into the woman's bathroom, the bathroom of their choice that matches with their current gender? It's just that, you know what it is, they're so obsessed with sex and gender, and they're so repressed that it comes out in all these weird ways. And this is where we're at right now. Okay. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, The Guardian is reporting on some big news coming out of Colorado, and we got a whole bunch of religious stuff. Don't go anywhere, guys. Son of a bitch. All right, we're back, guys. All right. For those of you who don't know, we're in the middle of a little... I wouldn't say the middle. We're at the beginning of a new studio thing. And at some point, we're going to do a fundraiser. So, and I was letting everybody know, like last Friday, for example, we had an hour show instead of an hour and 30 minutes. If I have to do that, stuff like that now from time to time, believe me, it's out of necessity. Because a lot's happened, renovations and stuff like that, and dealing with contracts and blah, 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 blah. All shit that I don't know how to do and I'm not good at. So I'm kind of being led around by others and trying to piece things together on a daily basis here. And it's a massive headache, and I don't have time for it. And, you know, so if at times I have to do an hour show instead of an hour and 30 minutes, Daddy still loves you, but he's a little busy at the moment. So just something to keep in mind here. All right. Now we're going to move along to The Guardian and what they're reporting about marijuana and Colorado and what's happening. The Guardian is reporting on this new phenomenon happening in Colorado. They say hundreds of families throughout the world have been drawn to Colorado to seek medical marijuana treatment for their children's ailments. These parents and their children, dubbed international medical marijuana refugees, travel thousands of miles in an attempt to procure what they say are life-saving elements. So they go on to say that many of the cases are horrible seizures due to epilepsy. And one mother from Ireland said this, quote, "We're not going to choose the option of being criminals with this in Ireland. We don't want to do things illegally, and we want to do it without a doctor." Okay. This is heartbreaking, man. I had a weird thought when I first read through this. I thought of that. Remember that old game, Oregon Trail, where, like, you'd ride in the wagon, and, hey, Steve got dysentery and died, and, like... I'm sure many of you know the game. If you're my generation, I was born in 88, and, you know, we were kind of raised playing that goofy game. But, like, I thought about that because it's like the idea was, okay, we have to go to Oregon, you know, for whatever reason. I don't even know. Gold Rush, was it? I don't know. We got to go there, so let's hop in the wagon and let's go. And, oh, my goodness, all these bad things are happening. Well, isn't it crazy that we all have to go there? And it's like this primitive time where you have to go to a certain place to get a certain thing, and why can't you just get it where you are originally? Well, that's what this is like. Like, okay, no, we have to get to Colorado because in Colorado it's legal and this is life-saving for our child who is sick. And we live in a world where the leaders do not care enough to go, you know, maybe this should be legal and available to them as medicine for their kid. I don't even want to complicate the conversation by adding in the recreational angle. I mean, you guys already know what my take is on recreational marijuana. I think that should be allowed as well. But understand, this is a different, easier conversation to have because the conclusion is just fucking screaming in your face. Really, that's what you're going to do. You're going to make it so that people have to change their lives completely, lose all their friends, all their surroundings, everything they've ever known, to come to Colorado just so that their kid is not in excruciating pain. The system is just bad. Like, there's no... And I was thinking about it, too. Like, you imagine politicians giving self-congratulatory speeches about all the good changes that they've made. But then you go, but this shit still exists. This still exists. Why are you congratulating yourself? The work's not done. Any politician in Ireland in this case or anywhere else where people had to... In other states in the U.S., New Jersey is another one where people had to move to Colorado to get the help they need. Any... self-congratulating politicians like, oh, we've done this and GDP has grown by X amount under me and we've had X amount of job creation and the state is in good shape and fuck off. Look at this. People have to change their lives completely and leave everything they've ever known just so that their kids aren't in excruciating pain. This is why we get so frustrated because there are so many issues in front of us that are just duh, that are not addressed. Another one, for example, what is it, in three states maybe, we have legal euthanasia, physician-assisted suicide? Well, that's another one. I'm in New York. I don't think we have it here in New York. So if I get super sick and I have a terminal illness and I hate every waking moment, I don't have the right to say, okay, it's time for me to peacefully end my life. I'm not doing it because I'm depressed or I'm this or I'm that. No, no, no. I had a good run. It was fun while it lasted. I'm in excruciating pain. I got to end this. The state can tell you, no, we are not going to let you make the most personal decision with your own body and livelihood. We are going to tell you you can't do that as an outside force here. That's just beyond stupid, beyond stupid. You're going to tell people in excruciating pain with terminal illnesses, fuck off, you can't end your pain. We treat our pets better, for Christ's sake. So many issues are a duh, and it's still not fixed. And then, by the way, it has the potential to get even worse if we don't move on it. The opinion polls are already on our side. The people are already on our side. But all it takes, at the way the law works in the U.S., all it takes is one asshole president to shut all this down. Not just the states that have it legal for recreational reasons, also the states that have it legal for medical reasons. All it takes is one asshole president to say, I disagree. I'm going to shut it all down. And they can. Why? Because under federal law, it's still illegal. Under the state laws, it's legal in some places. Federal law overrides state law as a supremacy clause of the Constitution. So keep rolling the dice, man. But we got to change, and we got to change for the better, and we got to do it now. The fight's not done. The fight isn't even fucking beginning yet, okay? We need this stuff to be legal all around the world, legal, taxed, and regulated. Why? Because it's a better outcome for people, and also you increase freedom and liberty, and you get people the medicine that they need. Okay. I got more for you. You ready for this? Let's go. Going back to transgender. What the fuck is... Did I skip? Of course I think I skipped something. Let me see if I did. I guess I didn't. I'm a mess today with the ordering of the stories. I'm a mess, as Donald Trump would say. I'm a tremendous mess. Matt Staver is a lunatic fundamentalist radio host, and he made some comments about the new Target policy that allows transgender people to go into whatever bathroom they please. So let's listen to what he had to say.
This provision, you know, the fact is that we know sexual assaults occur. They are going to occur with or without these laws. There's no question about that. People commit sexual assaults. They commit them in buildings. They commit them in restrooms. But what you have now done, knowing that sexual assaults occur, knowing that they occur in these places where women are trapped and they can't get out, now what we've done through these laws is we've opened the door for every rapist and pedophile. Frankly, when you look at some of the people behind the North Carolina law and some of these other laws, who are they? They have been identified as, some of them that have been advocating this, as pedophiles. Some of this is being financed by those who are actively promoting pedophilia.
Name one slapstick. He can't. You want to know why? He made it up. He said, well, I mean, look at this. The people who are advocating for transgender people going into the bathroom of their choice and being treated with dignity and respect, these are the same people who are in favor of pedophilia. I mean, come on. Am I right? No, you're not. No, you're not. Look, I've heard this all along, the slippery slope argument from the right when it comes to, you know, stuff like gay marriage and trans rights and whatnot. They throw some in there that are just not remotely correct. Like, they'll go, first we have gay marriage, then we'll have trans rights. And then you'll be able to marry a whale and fuck its blowhole. No? Nobody argued that last thing. You made that last thing up, which makes me think, what's going on in your mind? What's going on in there? And then, of course, the last step in all these is, and then, legal pedophilia. That's where it's going to be, legal pedophilia. Except, if you actually listen to the liberals and what they've argued for all along, they say, our standard is consenting adults. Consenting adults. If it's a child, it is by definition not an adult. And also, by definition, they can't consent because when you're under a certain age and you haven't hit puberty, you are biologically and physically unaware of exactly what sex is and the implications of it. So none of us have ever argued for legal pedophilia. You made that up. It clearly violates our standards. We say consenting adults. It's not consenting. It's not adult. So So they just make it up. Yeah, sure. You want to marry your chair? Go ahead, marry your fucking chair. Fine, this is where it's going next. And on top of that, you know what it does? It dehumanizes the actual relationships, for example, that gay people have and the marriages that they have. Where, you know, it belittles it. Like, that's the same as somebody marrying a fucking hat. You're marrying a hat is what you're doing. Or it's two adults with feelings and emotions and background stories and lives to talk about and lives, and they go, yeah, we love each other, we want to get married, and we're going to live happily ever after, and it's going to be a relationship like anybody else. Yeah, sure. That's the same as somebody marrying a Jackie Chan DVD from 1997. The fuck are you saying? What are you saying? It never made any sense. So there you go. Now, this is what happens, by the way, when people don't have a counterargument. When you don't have a counterargument to target saying, how about we just let people go into the bathroom of their choice? You know, how about if you're a trans woman, hey, you can go into the woman's bathroom. That's not controversial at all. When you can't respond to that with anything illogical, just strawman your opponent. And you say, same people who want pedophilia want this. But that's not true. But that's the argument I'm going to use because it's all I can say because I can't actually defeat you in a realm of ideas. Exactly. That's what we thought all along. Okay. Now, let's go on to another religious dingbat here. I think you guys remember this one, this guy that we're talking about here. It's been a while since we've covered him, though. So recently we covered a story about a public school that allows scholarships for Christians and Scientologists, but banned them for atheists. Well, Christian TV host Gordon Klingenschmidt weighed in on this, and he has an interesting take.
If a parent is an atheist parent and you have a child that you want to be raised atheist, I understand that.
There may
be a scholarship opportunity for them. But to advertise atheist scholarships to all of the Christian students or the Jewish students or even the homosexual students, to say that everyone should be able to get this money if you just renounce your faith, that to me is itself unconstitutional. There is no place for atheist recruiters to come into your schools and recruit children to violate their parents' religion. Now, there is a place for Christians to come into schools because the children are Christian, being raised by Christian parents, and a majority of the families in Lancaster, California are Christian families. And so for an opportunity to be offered to a Christian child that if they write an essay about God, that they should get a Christian scholarship money, that's not bribery. They're keeping their own religion. You're not converting anybody. You're informing and reinforcing what the parents want their kids' faith to be. This is a parental rights issue. And maybe they don't look at it that way. And granted, if you're an atheist parent and you have atheist kids, maybe you don't want your kids applying for certain scholarships. I get that. But to say to Christian children, we're going to bribe you with $1,750 if you convert and renounce your parents' faith by writing this essay about how great it is to be an atheist, that would be upsetting and offensive to the parents who want their children raised in the Christian faith. I get it. Maybe you don't get it, but I hope the judge throws out this frivolous lawsuit. The Bible says this in Psalm 14, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God, they are corrupt. They have done abominable works, and there is none who does good. Let's pray about this. Would you pray with me?
That was precious. So do you get what happened there? He's given this long, tortured explanation as to why it's okay that Christian scholarships are allowed at schools, but atheist ones should be banned. And then at the end of his rant, where he's pretending to be objective and thoughtful and, well, here's why this is okay and this is not okay, he literally quotes scripture that says atheists are, quote, fools, corrupt, abominable, and none of them are good. None of them. They're all bad. All atheists are bad. And then, of course, he says, will you pray with me? This guy is a fundamentalist through and through, to the point where it's creepy and it's scary. I mean, look at this guy. And the tortured logic, it never added up at any point. You know, there's no place for atheist recruiters on campus. By the way, it's not atheist recruiters. It's an atheist scholarship. If somebody's an atheist and they want to write an essay about discrimination they faced as an atheist, well, then they get a scholarship from an atheist group. He says there's no place for atheist recruiters. Well, they're not a recruiter, but okay, finish your thought. There are, though, for Christian recruiters. He just goes on to reiterate the double standard and say, it's cool. No, yeah, okay, so there is a double standard. Atheists not allowed, Christians allowed. Atheists not allowed, Christians allowed. But don't worry, it's cool because I get it. You might not get it. No, apparently you don't get it. You're not treating them equally. And by the way, look, I don't want any of these scholarships for any ideology to be sent there. But certainly if you are going to allow Christian scholarships and Scientologist scholarships, you have to allow atheist scholarships. That's not a question. If you allow it, you allow them all. Period. But obviously in his mind, no, I'm offended by one of them and not by the others. And he goes on to tell you the real reason at the end. He says, well, because let me quote this part of scripture that says, atheists are fools, corrupt, abominable, and none of them are good. They're all bad. Which, again, the cherry on top is that that proves the original point of the atheist group. Like, okay, we're going to do this this program, we're going to set this up, and we're going to do a scholarship for atheists who write an essay about discrimination that they felt in their life as a result of being atheist. Well, there's your ammunition right there. A guy just explained why it's okay to discriminate against you, and his reasoning ultimately was, by the end here, it says in the Bible that they're fools, they're corrupt, they're abominable, and all of them are bad. There's your discrimination right there. He doesn't even realize that he's discriminating against them as he's discriminating against them. Why? Because for religious reasons, he thinks they're all bad anyway. So I can say this, and it's not discrimination by definition. No, it is discrimination, and this is something we all need to call out more because it's pervasive. Anti-atheist bigotry. Here it is right in your face. Okay. More. An Arkansas man named Maverick Dean Bryan, his real name, found himself in a little hot water recently. So Raw Story explains here. He faces 7 counts of mailing threatening communications to mayors in... Okay, let me try that again because I said it like a stupid person. He faces 7 counts of mailing threatening communications to mayors in 7 different Arkansas cities. According to court documents, Bryan threatened to hang the 7 mayors on their courthouse lawns if they didn't force local schools to replace the Common Core curriculum with the Bible. Now, he also has 3 former felony convictions, and he isn't allowed to have a gun, but he still carries a gun anyway. But here's my favorite part, though. During depositions, Bryan admitted to placing ads in the local paper seeking $23 million to raise a Christian army to overthrow the U.S. government. Prosecutors stated that Bryan's letter also demanded that the mayors no longer honor votes cast by anyone who is homosexual, Muslim, socialist, communist, atheist, or anyone who worships a god other than Jesus Christ. So we have literally a stupid person planning this insurrection and this overthrow of the government, putting ads in the paper over it, saying, hey, you can't honor votes by gays, Muslims, socialists, communists, atheists, and saying, I'm going to kill 7 mayors and I'm going to hang them. And how much have you heard about this from the mainstream media? Crickets! So that's the sad place we are today. But it's okay, don't worry. I'm sure they're consistent about this, because if it was a Muslim who said, I'm going to kill 7 mayors for listening to people other than Muslims, and I'm going to raise a jihadist army, $23 million will get me a jihadist group, and I will attempt to overthrow the government. If that was the case happening inside the U.S., I'm sure there'd be no coverage of that either, right? Okay. Running out of time, but I got to squeeze in more of these stories, man. I got too many. Raw Story is reporting on the terrifying new effects of climate change here. So we recently learned that at least 5 reef islands in the remote Solomon Islands have been lost completely to sea level rise and coastal erosion, and a further 6 islands have been severely eroded. This is the first scientific evidence published in Environmental Research Letters that confirms the numerous anecdotal accounts from across the Pacific of the dramatic impacts of climate change on coastlines and people. For the past 20 years, the Solomon Islands have been a hot spot for sea level rise. Here, the sea has risen at almost 3 times the global average, around 7 to 10 millimeters per year since 1993. So that adds up to the point where now we know 5 islands are gone. They're underwater. Now, they also go on to point out that wave energy contributes to this as well. For whatever reason, in that area of the world, the energy of the waves crashing against the land is such that it increases erosion and over time makes it so that it goes underwater quicker. But the main point here is, look at where we're at. This is something that people did not think that it would happen in our lifetimes. Now it's happening in our lifetimes. In real time, we see islands that are going underwater. I'm also reminded of the Vice piece when I read this. I think the Vice piece was in, I think it was Bangladesh, where in certain areas of Bangladesh, the sea level is clearly rising to the point where it's disrupting people and they have to move because places where they were before is now underwater. So this shouldn't be taken lightly, man. And as I've said before as well, when you talk about sea level rise, it's actually one of the least bad consequences of climate change. Like, people always point to that as when you think about climate change, like, oh, well, if you're going to have places underwater, that's a big problem. But comparatively speaking to the other issues, it's almost like that's one of the on the lower level of problems that come about as a result of climate change. The bigger problems are water scarcity. I mean, there could be wars over water. Think about that for a second. Bigger problems are drought and famine. Well, as soon as you get drought and famine, well, then all of a sudden the cost of your normal food goods goes up tremendously, and then everybody's panicking. It's going to affect everybody in one way or another in due time. And we've already seen, for example, increased natural disasters that are more severe than they would have been without climate change, and the patterns are clear on that. If you look at, for example, wildfires, they've gotten bigger and more powerful over time, partly as a result of climate change. So there's so many issues that come about as a result of it. We don't even pay attention to the worst ones. But now we know because it's happening in real time, yeah, islands are going to go underwater, and they already are. Okay, next. I got one more here to talk about. We have some disastrous news coming out of South Sudan here. According to Reuters, up to 5.3 million people in South Sudan may face severe food shortages during this year's lean season, the UN World Food Program said on Monday. Nearly double the number in the first 3 months of the year. From January to March, 2.8 million people were classed as being in crisis or emergency food situations, with about 40,000 thought to be suffering an outright famine. Now, let's remember that while this is going on, so 5.3 million people in South Sudan have severe food shortages, while that's happening, 40% of the food created in America ends up being thrown out. Now, I don't know the number, or I don't remember the number. Perhaps at some point we did a story, but for the rest of the industrialized world, but I'd imagine it's in the same ballpark, which means we're throwing out so much food. And when you see that in some places in the world there's famine, there's drought, there's severe food shortages, we have to set up some sort of system that makes it so that the food that we throw out gets to them. Now, obviously, there's, you know, issues with keeping it fresh, and there's a million and one issues that you'd have to iron out before you do this successfully. But the idea that we can't set up some sort of effective system to limit the damage of the crisis happening there, I don't buy that for a second. And my main response here is, this is what the UN was made for, stuff like this. So I have no problem with this kind of intervention. And if you were to tell me my tax dollars were going to this instead of random wars that make no sense, I'd be much happier about that. Anybody with a fucking conscience and a basic moral code can go, oh, okay, I see the reason for doing this. So we should set up some sort of system. This is what the UN was made for, and food aid is something that's absolutely necessary and something I'm totally on board with. And imagine for a second that you had 5.3 million people in severe crisis due to terrorism, or you had 40,000 people, they say, are suffering an outright famine, so thousands of them are going to die. Let's say 40,000 people dying because of terrorism right now somewhere in the world, and there's some evil, scary group attacking them. Well, we attack those problems, right? We would cover that nonstop. But when it's something banal, like, hey, food shortages, all of a sudden, no coverage. No, that's still people who are affected and who are in pain and who are, many of them, going to die as a result of this problem. You can give that a little bit of coverage, too, don't you think? Okay. I'm out of time, guys. I love you. I'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Mwah. Peace.